From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, The Keepers, Alien Messages for the Human Race with Jim Sparks, with a special appearance next hour with Linda Moulton Howe. She knows him. Ramzi Youssef, the mastermind of the first terrorist attack on the World Trade Center, claims that he converted from Islam to Christianity. This 60-minute segment will be broadcast Sunday, October 14th on the CBS television network. In a moment, Peter Lance will react to this story and some others. The survival of the world is at stake if Muslims and Christians do not make peace with each other, according to leaders of the Muslim world. They are warning the Pope and other Christian leaders in an unprecedented open letter signed by 138 leading scholars from every sect of Islam. The Muslims plead with Christian leaders to come together with us on the common essentials of our two religions and spell out the similarities between passages of the Bible and the Quran. The scholars state, this is an interesting passage here, as Muslims, we say to Christians that we are not against them and that Islam is not against them. So long as they do not wage war against Muslims on account of their religion, oppress them, and drive them out of their homes. It's an interesting paragraph. At least 90 patients died from an infectious superbug in three neighboring hospitals in southern Britain in 2 years due to the lack of basic hygiene, according to a report out there. The patients died after being contaminated with a secondary infection caused by poor hospital care, according to the Health Care Commission. Let me tell you something. Staph infections are very dangerous, even in U.S. hospitals, and a lot of people have had severe injury, illness, and they've died because of it. Foreclosures filings across the U.S. nearly doubled last month compared with September of 2006, as financially strapped homeowners, already behind on mortgage payments, defaulted on their loans or came closer to losing their homes to foreclosure. A total of 223,538 foreclosure filings reported in September. That's up from 112,210 in the same period a month ago. Ancient gravitational interactions with Venus and Jupiter could help explain some quirks about our moon's orbit, according to a new computer model. I like this story. Scientists think Earth's only natural satellite was born when a rogue Mars-sized object struck a young and still molten Earth. The collision created a disk of debris around Earth that eventually formed our moon about 4.5 billion years ago. Today, the moon's rotation, they say, is unusual in that it spins on its axis with a tilt and that it travels along a particularly elongated oval-shaped path around the Earth. If you go to the coasttocoastam.com website, take a look at the story of the artist implanting a third ear on his own arm. I kid you not, he thinks it's art. Performance artists are known for pushing the boundaries, right? But one Australian has astonished his contemporaries by having a third ear implanted on his arm. The eccentric, his name is Stelios Arkadios, spent 10 years searching for a surgeon willing to perform this controversial operation. Well, he got his wish after working as a research fellow at the Nottingham Trent University's Digital Research Unit. The ear was grown in a lab from cells and implanted onto the 61-year-old's left forearm in 2006. He simply says, "I hope to have a tiny microphone implanted to it that will connect with a Bluetooth transmitter. That way you can listen to what my ear is hearing." In a moment, Peter Lance joins us. We're going to talk about this story about Ramzi Youssef, the mastermind of the first World Trade Center bombing, converting to Christianity. And as you will hear from Peter Lance, he believes Ramzi Youssef is also responsible for 9/11. All that is more, and Coast to Coast continues in a moment. Peter Lance is a five-time Emmy Award-winning investigative reporter, now working as a screenwriter and a novelist. In 1981, Lance became investigative correspondent for ABC News, also a member of the first American crew into Indochina after the end of the Vietnam War. He has covered major stories 1,000 Years for Revenge, Cover Up, Triple Cross are just a few of his books. His website, peterlance.com. He is our guest this hour on Coast to Coast. Peter, my friend, good to have you back with us. How are you?
Great to be back, George.
Hey, this story of Ramzi Youssef switching to Christianity, is this true?
Well, you know, have to watch the 60 Minutes piece on Sunday to find out for sure, but I don't think it's necessarily impossible because Youssef, as you know, and we'll get into this in a few minutes, is not just the architect of the first Trade Center bombing where six people died. He's also the architect of the 9/11 plot. So he's sitting in prison for the rest of his life in solitary confinement in a 12-by-7-foot cell day in and day out, knowing that he killed almost 3,000 people. And the God of Allah has proven more often than not to be a God of revenge. In fact, the very title of my first book, 1,000 Years from Revenge, comes from Baluchistan, where Youssef was born. And they have a saying, if it takes me 10 centuries to kill my enemy, I will wait 1,000 years for revenge. So much of what we're seeing now in terms of Islamofascism is a result of the Crusades, payback. And so if you're looking at the end of your life and thinking, where am I going to go? Do you look to the God of revenge or do you look to the God of redemption? And don't get me wrong, George, as you know, Christianity, a multitude of sins has been committed in the name of Christianity, including the Crusades, which begot much of this hate. But Jesus Christ, if we're to read the simple scripture, is a religious figure that believed in redemption and forgiveness. So if I was Ramzi and if I had to choose and I had the time to think about it that he has, it's not that far-fetched to think that he would have chosen the cross over the cemetery, if you will.
Well, there's no question that it's a major story. I'm just wondering if it's another one of his tricks, Peter, if there's something afoot here.
Well, George, the thing that struck me the most when Andrew Breitbart of the Drudge Report, as soon as he picked up the story, he sent it to me today. Andrew's a great guy. He's been a follower of my work. The thing that struck me was what was not in the story. And if Scott Pelley, and we know he's a great journalist, but if Scott Pelley actually got into the Supermax prison with a CBS crew of probably 10 people with two camera crews, as they always do, and he only asked Ramzi Youssef if he did the first Trade Center bombing, and if he didn't put the ultimate question to him, are you also the architect of 9/11? If he didn't ask that question, it would be incredibly irresponsible. And yet, in this piece on the Drudge Report, we don't see any reference to Youssef's denial of the second attack. So I think I can't wait to see this piece, because if the most that comes out of this, when you have the opportunity to interview the mastermind of the greatest mass murder in American history, and if you don't at least put the question to him, then it's a softball interview, in my opinion.
So you don't believe that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who's wasting away in a hole somewhere, that you think he just implemented Youssef's ideas, that he wasn't the mastermind. Is that correct?
Absolutely. In fact, George, if you go, you've always been generous about referring people to my website. We have that timeline from Triple Cross. It's a 32-page timeline illustrated. I call it the Little Golden Book of Terror, or Terrorism for Dummies, if you will. It's on the top right-hand corner of peterlance.com. Anybody can download it right now as a PDF. And if you go through that timeline, you will see what I believe in the course of three books to be irrefutable proof that Ramzi Youssef created and set in motion the 9/11 plot in the Philippines in the fall of 2004. And after his arrest in early 1994, and after his arrest in early 1995, his uncle, by the way, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was his uncle, merely implemented the plot.
I'm wondering if 60 Minutes even touched on the TWA Flight 800, which you and I believe could have been a Ramzi Youssef maneuver as well.
Exactly. I don't know. You know, George, what's really important, and I really appreciate you having me on now, because as we've discussed a little bit, and I talked to Ian about it a week or so ago, next week, next Monday, is the start of the murder trial of R. Lindley DeVecchio, the former supervisory special agent of the FBI. And that trial, believe it or not, even though it's a mob murder trial in Brooklyn, that trial holds within it the possibility of reopening the entire 9/11 investigation. And so this could not be more timely. On my website, I actually have a story about Abdul Hakim Murad, who was Yousef's oldest friend. He was a pilot trained in four U.S. flight schools. When I went to the Philippines and I interviewed Colonel Rodolfo Mendoza in 2002, the man who interrogated Murad, Murad told him, I will fly the planes in for Allah. He was going to be the Atah, if you will, the lead pilot of this plot. And then, of course, the plot was interdicted when their bomb factory had a fire. Yousef was captured in Pakistan a month later. Murad was captured that night. But Abdul Hakim Murad was sitting in one jail cell in 1996 in the federal jail, the MCC in Lower Manhattan. Greg Scarpa Jr., a junior wise guy for the Colombo family, is in the middle cell, and Ramzi Yousef, the very object of this discussion tonight, is in the opposite cell. And Yousef breaks a bedstrut away from the wall, starts passing notes through the wall, through Scarpa to Murad. Could not make this story up. How do I know this? On my website, peterlance.com, over on the left, you'll see FBI 302s, dozens of FBI internal memos from 1996 documenting the treasure trove of evidence gathered by this junior mobster, Greg Scarpa Jr., that proves, among other things, George, one, the existence of an Al-Qaeda cell in New York City in 96, never admitted to by Condi Rice when she testified before the 9/11 Commission, of the connection between the Khobar Towers bombing and Al-Qaeda. If you look at The Kingdom, that movie that just came out, directed by Peter Berg, produced by Michael Mann, that's kind of a metaphorical look at the Khobar Towers bombing. Well, until Yousef gave Scarpa the evidence, which Scarpa gave to the FBI, everyone thought only Iranian Hezbollah was responsible. But Yousef admitted to Scarpa that he had even scouted the truck for the bombing. Next revelation was a plot to hijack a plane to free the blind sheikh. That turned up in a presidential daily briefing to President Clinton in 98 and the infamous Crawford, Texas PDB of August 6, 01, just weeks before 9/11. That's how important the information was. And that most important of all, as you've referenced earlier, was my belief that the downing of TWA-800 on the 17th of July, 1996, was Bojinka fulfilled. It was a bomb planted on a 747 that was the fulfillment of Yousef's Bojinka plot in the middle of a trial with the help of getting a mistrial for Yousef. There are 302s on my website, the one from the 5th of March, 1996, that says Greg Scarpa Jr. is saying that Ramzi Yousef wants to get a bomb on a plane so we'll get a mistrial in the Bojinka case. The day after the plane went down, the night before the most significant evidence going in, which was the confession of Murad to Colonel Mendoza, that plane went down off of Mauritius Point in Long Island. And what did Ramzi do in front of Judge Duffy? Mistrial, Your Honor, mistrial. Over the next 4 weeks, as the good old U.S. Navy dredged up 96% of the plane, and if in fact it had been a missile, an errant missile from the Navy, they never would have put that evidence together in a hangar because they would have been culpable. I believe the reason the Navy was so scrupulous in gathering that evidence, George, is because they did not have a missile go awry. And I believe that I've proven in this book, Cover Up, the second of my three books, at least by a civil standard, preponderance of the evidence, that was an Al-Qaeda bomb. So all of this stuff, this treasure trove from Greg Scarpa to the FBI, taken so seriously at the time that they gave him a camera to photograph the notes, they then set up a phony mafia front company, they let Yousef make outside calls. One of the calls was to Doha, Qatar, where the FBI realized Khalid Sheikh was. They sent the hostage rescue team, and they lost him a second time, the master, quote, mastermind of 9/11. All of that stuff was later denigrated by people like Patrick Fitzgerald, who went on to be the CIA, special prosecutor, CIA leak. They denigrated it, called it a hoax and a scam. Now, how could Greg Scarpa Jr., a mobster with a 10th grade education, make these intricate bomb schematics like you'll see on my website? What would be Ramzi Yousef's motive of giving this information to the FBI? He's on trial. Why would he give this stuff? No, it was I proven triple cross by interviewing the very prisoner, John Napoli, who the feds claimed was the source for the hoax and the scam story. I interviewed him, and you know how I got him? I told you through Coast to Coast AM. I was talking to you one night.
Yeah.
Every guy in prison listens to your show, George. Every single inmate that's up in a prison in America listens to Coast to Coast. And his sister, Napoli's sister, called me the next day. I got a hold of him, taped him with the permission in his lawyer's office through a phone call from Texas prison, and Napoli told me in no uncertain terms he never called that a hoax and a scam. So that treasure trove of evidence was buried. Why? To preserve a series of mafia cases in Brooklyn that would have gone down or unraveled if Greg Scarpa had been believed, who was later going to talk about his father was in a corrupt relationship with Lynn DeVecchio. I write my book. A year later, the Brooklyn DA reads my book, calls me in for a meeting. They impanel a grand jury, and Special Agent DeVecchio, who was down in Sarasota clipping his coupons, was brought to New York and indicted on 4 counts of murder. Wow. He will go to trial on Monday, and that trial, if it goes all the way and he's convicted, will pop open the 9/11 investigation.
If Yusuf was responsible for masterminding 9/11 and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was one of those who helped implement it, where does Osama bin Laden fit into this scheme, Peter?
He is the paymaster. He is the titular head of Al-Qaeda. And as you if people download that timeline at peterlance.com, we'll see, starting in the early 80s, first with Dr. Ayman al-Zawahiri, who was running after the assassination of Sadat. Dr. al-Zawahiri, Egyptian radical surgeon from a very prominent family, created the Egyptian, or not created, but was one, became a leader in the Egyptian Islamic Jihad, which was a precursor to al-Qaeda. He sponsored this spy, Ali Mohammed, who infiltrated the CIA in Hamburg in 84, the Fort Bragg for 2 years, 87 to 89, and ultimately the FBI from 82 to 80, from 92 to 98. Dr. al-Zawahiri sponsored Ali, and then al-Zawahiri and bin Laden met effectively during the Afghan War, and they formed in 1988, they merged this new network called al-Qaeda. And from 1999, George, 1989, the next year, they had an absolute al-Qaeda cell in New York City. It was trained by Ali Mohammed, and the irony is, the tragedy is that the New York office of the FBI, the best of the best, had been tracking these guys from the summer of 89 when Bush 41 was in the White House. The same guys, two of whom later convicted in the Trade Center bombing with Yusuf, two later convicted in the plot to blow up the bridges and tunnels with the blind sheikh in 95, one of them, El Sayed Nasser, who murdered Rabbi Kahane in 1990. These are the same individuals, George, the FBI had on their radar for years and years. And the essence of my findings were that the FBI effectively bracketed the intelligence to cover up their incompetence and their mistakes. And they didn't want other agencies or the American public to know how they had blown it so many times. The fatal consequence was that they failed to share that intelligence with the CIA, the DIA, the NSA, and other of the big five agencies, and 9/11 ultimately happened. The worst thing they did, and I say they, meaning like I name the names in my books, and people in the Justice Department, Jamie Gorelick, Deputy Attorney General, who went on to be one of the 9/11 commissioners, Dietrich Snell, who was a prosecutor in the Southern District of Yusuf in the Bojinka case, later became senior counsel to the 9/11 commission, Patrick Fitzgerald, James Kallstrom, the head of the New York office. Those individuals basically made an ends justifies the means decision in August of 96 to preserve these mafia cases, denigrate Greg Jr., who was going to say that his father was involved in this relationship. Mm-hmm. They did not want a bunch of mobsters to walk out of jail. And George, think about what, how much damage in all of the years did the American mafia, organized crime, do to America? It doesn't even compare to the loss of the Twin Towers, to the attack of 9/11. And yet the FBI focused with to such a great degree on the mafia to the exclusion of al-Qaeda that the towers ultimately went down.
Peter, when we come back, I want you to react to all these sources that seem to be saying something big is afoot here. And I'm telling you, these stories are coming from all over the place, and some of them are extremely strange stories. And all of this sometimes makes me feel like that movie in Black Rain with Michael Douglas and Andy Garcia, yeah. when Michael was on the other side of the fence and Andy was on the motorcycle. Mm-hmm. Remember that scene? Mm-hmm. And he got his yep. head chopped off. It's almost that helpless feeling right now. What can we do? So stay with us. Peter Lance is our special guest. We'll be back. We'll take phone calls as well. But I want to get Peter's reaction to the possibility that can something else happen? And then we'll take your calls. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Okay, we're going to take your phone calls with Peter Lance when we come right back. Next hour, Mr. Jim Sparks joins us with Linda Moulton Howe joining us for the first hour. She knows him well. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Peter, everybody's talking now about how Al-Qaeda has strengthened. I'm hearing these bizarre stories about the possibility of things happening as an excuse to go into Iran. What's your gut tell you, Peter? And then what do your sources tell you? What's going on?
Well, I've never felt that Al-Qaeda was degraded. I think this whole idea that they were degraded, now they're reconstituted, is ridiculous. Al-Qaeda is, as I've said, as tightly organized as a Panzer division. Bin Laden, al-Zawahiri on top. There's been a little bit of evidence of late that there may be have been some falling out between the two of them, but they remain tightly organized. And as long as bin Laden and al-Zawahiri are around, the head of the snake, using the metaphor they used for the United States, the head of the snake is going to be very vital and deadly. And I believe that al-Qaeda, we know, George, from August of 2006, where they tried to basically redo the Bojinka plot over the Atlantic Ocean, only to have MI5, unravel it. Right. The whole idea of, the reason people cannot bring liquids onto planes now was basically, a replay of the Bojinka plot. And it was exactly the evidence that the FBI buried, that Scarpa Jr. uncovered with Youssef. There are 302s on my website that talk about how to smuggle explosives onto an airplane that Scarpa got from Youssef in 96. Acetone peroxide is what he's talking about using as a base explosive. That was the primary base explosive from this transatlantic plot in 06. So we know that Al-Qaeda always tries to fulfill unfulfilled plots. They didn't get the towers the first time. They got them on 9/11. They tried to blow up the USS Sullivans in the Middle East. They had an inflatable that sunk. They got the coal. They fulfill their unfulfilled plots, and clearly the idea of blowing up multiple U.S. airliners over water was always the dream of Youssef and KSM. So they'll try it again if they can. But I also believe that one of the scenarios that other people have discussed that would be just very easy for them to do is to do multiple bombings in the United States the same day, hit some place like Herald Square near Macy's in New York, the Water Tower area in Chicago, maybe the Beverly Center. And I say God forbid to that. I'm not predicting it or saying I have any special evidence, but it would be very easy for them to do that.
And you're not telling them anything they haven't already thought about.
No, of course not. In fact, Ali Muhammad, this is one of the great reasons people need to understand the Ali Muhammad story. Ali Muhammad actually sat in Sacramento across from Patrick Fitzgerald in a restaurant in October of 97, and he said, I love bin Laden. I don't need a fatwa to attack America. Now, this is a naturalized U.S. citizen and an honorably discharged Army sergeant committing treason, effectively, saying he doesn't need a religious decree to attack
right.
America. And but maybe more importantly, he said, I have 100 operatives that I could make operational at any time, sleepers, effectively. So he's telling Patrick Fitzgerald this. Now, they never wrapped up a single one of those guys, even though Ali was copped a plea and got a deal and never had to testify. They never wrapped up a single one. How do we know this? Because by now they would have publicized it. Last December, Patrick Fitzgerald made great fanfare in Chicago, he's also a U.S. attorney there, for allegedly thwarting a terror plot in a shopping mall. What was the terror plot? Some guy was so broke and so indigent that he had to pawn a stereo system to raise the money to buy grenades from undercover officers that he was going to explode in a mall. Now, that's not some Al-Qaeda plot. That's just some poor, pathetic guy. And yet that was what Patrick Fitzgerald was touting as a major terror bust. So the Bureau still doesn't get it. They had a year ago when a Triple Cross came out the first time, they had 13 Arab-speaking agents 5.5 years after 9/11. That's the best they've done. They don't have the virtual case file system. They still can't do what I could do with Google and FileMaker Pro. You know, that is to say, put in every single variation on an Islamic name and connect the dots. And Director Mueller said it would be 2009 before they have the system in place, even though they spent hundreds of millions of dollars on it. So the Bureau doesn't get it, and we remain at risk. And the enemy is incredibly capable, George. And, you know, my kids live in New York. I worry. I believe me, I don't want to alarm your listeners unnecessarily, but people should just be as vigilant as they can.
All right, let's take some calls, and then I've got more questions for you, Peter, as well. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi there, George. First, I'm one of your non-incarcerated listeners.
Okay.
I was wondering for Mr. Lance, are you familiar with any of the investigation that was published in the New American linking some of these same individuals to the bombing at the Oklahoma Federal Building? And do you think there's any relationship between that bombing and the World Trade Center?
Yeah, in fact, William Jasper, W.F. Jasper, who's written some of those groundbreaking stories, actually tried to contact me today. It's very ironic that you should say that. The publicist for HarperCollins sent me an email and gave me his phone number, and I left him a long message. I've always had great respect for William Jasper. I have an entire, not only a chapter in my first book, but on my website, peterlance.com, you can go in and you can find a chapter called John Doe Number 2, in which I make a very strong circumstantial case that Ramzi Youssef was at school Terry Nichols in the Philippines on how to build that bomb. In fact, Congressman Dana Rohrabacher of California issued a report, and it got buried because it came out like December 26th of last year. It's on my website, the report, and he actually found, because Congressman Rohrabacher, who's a real conservative, political conservative, but was always intrigued by the possibility, was there a foreign connection to the bombing? And he went to the Philippines, and his chief investigator, Fedra Dugan, and you know one of the things they found that was astonishing? They actually found a telephone records from the time Youssef was in New York in 1992. I don't think I've told George this. And from when Youssef was in New York building the first bomb in 92 for the Trade Center, he was calling a home in Queens, I believe, that was where the relatives of Marie Faye Nichols lived. That was Terry Nichols' Filipino wife. Now, what are the odds that Youssef would be calling a rooming house in the greater New York area while he's building the World Trade Center bomb to seek out a Filipina related to the wife of Terry Nichols? It's off the charts. So and another thing they found, by the way, in this report was there was a certain a chemical, I'm blanking on the name of the actual book by a guy named Tenney, but there's a relatively obscure chemical book by a guy named Tenney, T-E-N-N-Y, The Chemistry of Powder and Explosives is the name of the book. And that book was found in Youssef's bomb factory, and they found out that Terry Nichols actually had that book with him in the Philippines. So, I mean, you'll see if you go to peterlance.com and look under the John Doe Number 2 chapter, you'll see that I think there's a very strong possibility. And no less a person than Richard Clark, the terrorism czar, actually in his memoir, Against All Enemies, said he thought there was a possibility of a Philippines connection to the OK City bombing.
Okay, next up, let's go to our wild card line. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, hello. And make it really fast because you got a scratchy phone, dear.
Okay. If everything comes past that they reopen the 9/11.
It's too scratchy. I'm sorry. See if you can get a better connection there. Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi there, George. My name is Nancy. I'm calling from Dallas. And hello, Mr. Lance. I'd like to know why you aren't running our country, sir. But I'm so impressed with your knowledge and how you have traced all these things. I just want to ask you if they did not, the FBI did not set out to bring about the ends of the Twin Towers. Correct, sir? Is that correct?
No, I'm not. And George and I have tilted windmills a little bit on this, and other members of guests on his show. I'm not a member of the inside job theory, the idea that the government created 9/11. I think if you really look at the history of Al-Qaeda, it is completely real. It's a tremendous threat. And it's not, even though we trained the Mujahideen in the beginning in Afghanistan, we helped these guys learn who they were, we did not sustain Al-Qaeda all these years, nor was there some multiple administration over three separate presidential administrations plot to attack America. It just defies belief. However, do I believe the government was criminally negligent in failing to stop 9/11? Absolutely.
Even turned their cheek the other way, Peter.
Yeah, no, I mean, George, believe me. But look, the motive, I believe, and people get disappointed in me. Many of your listeners write in later, they send me these emails, and they go, Peter, come on, smell the coffee, man. How could they have not been in on this? And the truth is, often when you're an investigative reporter or any detective or investigator, the simplest solution is often the truest, even though it may not be the most dramatic. In this case, what I believe is that they screwed, and when I say they, I'm talking about the two Bin Laden offices of origin, the New York office of the FBI, where the original Joint Terrorism Task Force was based, and the Southern District Prosecutor's Office, for which all of the cases prior to 9/11, all of the War on Terror was a series of legal cases investigated by the Bureau in this office and prosecuted by the SDNY. They screwed up so many times, and they wanted to cover up their screw-ups, that they bracketed the intelligence and didn't share it with other agencies. By the way, The Looming Tower, I don't want to sound jealous, Lawrence Wright's book that won the Pulitzer Prize from my alma mater, Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism, that book, which is the number one bestseller in the nonfiction intelligence list, I want everybody to read The Looming Tower and then read Triple Cross. Lawrence Wright basically bought hook, line, and sinker the Bureau's position that they lost out to the CIA. It's absolutely wrong. The CIA lost out to the FBI. The FBI, which is entirely in charge of investigating domestic terrorism in this country, was monitoring this cell for years and years and years, and they blew it. They failed to stop the first Trade Center bombing. They failed to stop the African embassy bombing, and I prove it in this book, Triple Cross. And for example, Lawrence Wright has 30 separate references to Muhammad Jamal Khalifa, the brother-in-law of Bin Laden, who recently was murdered. And this guy, Khalifa, was the bagman in the Philippines. He was the guy that supplied the money for Yousef's KFM cell that begat the 9/11 plot. Here's Lawrence Wright of The New Yorker, Pulitzer Prize winner, interviews this guy, never once brings up the most astounding failure in the Justice Department regarding Muhammad Jamal Khalifa, which is that he was captured on December 16, 1994, in California, exactly in the same spot where Ali Muhammad was hanging around, in the same hometown as Ali Muhammad's control agent, John Zenn. He was captured. The system worked. And he had on him a Newton PDA linking him to the Blind Sheikh, the New York cell of Ramzi Youssef, and the Philippines cell that begat 9/11. He's like a treasure trove of intelligence, and he's got a murder conviction hanging over his head in Jordan. He's motivated to talk, right? And do you know that Jamie Gorelick and Warren Christopher, who was then Secretary of State, and Jamie Gorelick, Deputy Attorney General, literally pushed for this guy to be extradited to Jordan. And by the time he left the country, the sentence had already been the charges had been dropped because somebody recanted. And basically, he had no motivation to talk, and we let this guy go. The brother-in-law of Osama bin Laden. Is there one word about that in The Looming Tower? No. Shame on Lawrence Wright. Shame on him. You ought to turn in his Pulitzer Prize. How dare he write a book about the road to 9/11, blame the CIA for the Kuala Lumpur meeting, which is like the old saw. I show in my book, Triple Cross, that the FBI, one of the top agents in the New York office, knew about the Kuala Lumpur meeting and should have pushed to find Al-Mandar and Al-Hazmi, the two muscle hijackers. And yet Lawrence Wright does a cover story, which the New York Times runs a page one book review in August of 06, which propels the book onto the New York Times list, becomes a bestseller, Pulitzer Prize winner, and he tells only a part of the story, just as the 9/11 Commission told a part of the story, and they were nominated for a National Book Award. You got to get educated, people. You got to read the stuff. And you can start with my books. Read The Looming Tower first. I recommend it. I don't want anybody to think I'm downing the competition. Read Lawrence Wright's book, and then go back and read Triple Cross, and your jaw's going to be on the ground for what he left out of that Pulitzer Prize-winning study.
You know, Peter, I think everything that you've said over the years on the program with us is riveting, very, very accurate. But something behind me tells me the relationship that members of our government had with bin Laden, the knowledge, the forethought of what might have happened, I still think that there's a strange story out there with what you have uncovered.
Yeah. Well, George, I'm always open to the truth. I will never, if somebody presents me with probative evidence that there is a through line, you know, I just don't, I've covered government for too long to believe in this, the trilateral commission kind of theory that there's this shadow government that, don't get me wrong, George, I believe that what Eisenhower said about the military-industrial complex is absolutely true. I believe that we're being led by defense makers, our foreign policy is shaped around it. I believe we ended up going into Iraq, the wrong war. We didn't put enough into Afghanistan, the right war. I believe that Iraq has been a tragedy of epic proportions that has turned back the clock in the war on terror. And it's not just me, the National Intelligence Estimate, the last compilation of 16 separate agencies reached that conclusion. But I just have not seen evidence that over a 20-year period that Al-Qaeda was somehow manufactured by us, by some element in the U.S. government that transcends administrations, sustained, and then that 9/11 became the consequence. I believe that we just turned our back with classic American arrogance on these mujahideen that we had trained.
Financed,
totally. $3 billion matched by $3 billion from the Saudis. I also believe that because of the power of Saudi Arabia in this country, because of the amount of money they have here, the relationship to the Bush family, they got a total pass on 9/11. Look how they, all the guys, as Craig Unger reported beautifully in his book, House of Bush, House of Saud, these guys were like basically, again, like escorted out of the country like Muhammad Jamal Khalifa. You know, but that does not necessarily mean that there was an inside job where guys sat around a table and go, we're going to attack America. We're going to create a phony.
No, I agree. But it's a little also, though, like your theory of Ramzi Youssef calling the boarding house in the Philippines. I mean, it's just too weird, the relationships.
Well, I mean, okay, tell me a little bit more about what you mean.
They all knew each other. They all had deals with each other. They've all profited together. I mean, I don't know what happened. I do believe your end of the story. I think that's the mechanics of what was going on. I just think somewhere along the line, somebody helped finance this car beyond bin Laden. And the relationships with people are just too weird. I mean, you know, if I interviewed you on this program, Peter, and then tomorrow somebody said, oh, my God, Peter Luntz, his books have sold 10 million. I would say it had a lot to do with this show because of the timing. There's just too many strange things that went on out there with 9/11. And when I look at what's happening today and the profiting and the whittling away of our rights and everything else, I'm telling you, there's something strange. What you and I need to look for is what people are beginning to say right now, and that is look for a major event before the Iranian attack. That's what we have to look for.
Yeah, no, look, I don't, there's little doubt in my mind that...
A minute ago.
Look, George, listen, there's no doubt in my mind that Bush and Cheney decided in the summer of 01 when all this noise was coming in, when they had a really incredible sense that, you know, the light is blinking red, the guy's hair is on fire, that something, and they let it happen, okay, a Reichstag-like event that justified intervention in Iraq. There's no doubt in my mind that that happened, okay? But, and there's no doubt that they want to deflect the attention of the American people now away from the problems with the economy and everything else and invade Iran. It's just another boon to the military-industrial complex, and they're going to look for an event to try and make that happen, even though our military is so strained beyond capacity that that would be another catastrophic blunder. But that doesn't necessarily sync with some 20-some year theory. I mean, my timeline on peterlance.com, in the upper right corner to download, starts with the murder of Sadat. And I do think that, as I do say, George, there's a limited universe. There are like 25 feds and 25 members of Al-Qaeda, from bin Laden down and Patrick Fitzgerald down. You do see the same players come up time and time again. Yeah.
And they all know each other. Peter, we've got to run.
Anyway.
You and I need to get together for a full show in a very, very close time period. I'll be back in a moment. Linda Moulton Howe joins us next hour only with our special guest, Jim Sparks, a classic coast to coast right around the corner.